before. And so we spent two nights in the Nasna forest, set up a little tent in the Nasna forest, surrounded by trees, indigenous trees, no other sounds, no reception. And then we spent four nights in Otsuin, which was incredible. Our kids had never seen the Kangaroo Caves. Because we'd saved up some money, we're like, hey, we're going to, it's because expensive for a family of six, oh my goodness. But we went to the Kangaroo Caves, and I'd been a bunch of times, but I got there with actually fresh eyes. If you've been to the Kangaroo Caves, it's a brilliant experience, and the guys know how to milk it. Firstly, how to sell you things that are really expensive, but how to actually, we had a tour guide that really knew how to accentuate it, how to increase the experience. Like, she'd been doing this obviously for a long time. So you get to the entrance of the cave and they take you in down these stairs, and it's like dimly lit little walkways. And every now and then the tour guide, this lady, would just get you, say, okay, let's stop here. You'd stop there and it's dimly lit, and behind her it's completely dark. And you can kind of just see the outlines of a bunch of things. You can see there's some rocks, there's some things there. And then she starts talking about how it was formed, how water would seep through the cave roof, would drip down over years and years, and one drop would leave a little bit of sediment. And different types of sediment would lead to different types of color. And stalagmites and stalactites, the stuff we learn about in school, hey? And she would really build this up. And then when she would get to this moment, when she'd say, okay, I'm going to turn on the lights. Are you guys ready? She'd really like build it up. And then you would hear the switch being flicked, and suddenly the lights would go on. And in front of you are these weird and wonderful shapes. And as one man, everyone there just goes, whoa. Because it's incredible. Maybe put up that first pic. It's not going to do justice to it at all. But that's one of the pics. My daughter took that pic, actually. Like, the lights go on. Up until this point, it was just like darkness. And then suddenly you see this and you don't know where to look. You look there, it's amazing. You look there, it's amazing. And she'll go, look behind you. There's like where stalagmite and the stalactite met. And it would just lead to awe and wonder. We just sit there going, stand there going, this is amazing. So this is our last sort of message on worship. We've had about four messages just focusing on worship. And we're coming back to the foundation of worship. And the foundation of worship is awe and wonder. The moment I had in the Kangaroo Cave, that we would have that with God, going like, whoa. And when that happens in your heart, the natural response is, oh my goodness, you're amazing, God. And it becomes worship. And so today I want to actually answer a question. What leads us to awe and wonder? And we're going to read Psalm 33, or a passage. Okay, Psalm 33, David. David, the man who probably knew more about worship than any of us, says, the Lord, oh, just think about these words. Like, these words should bring us to our knees. The Lord merely spoke, and the heavens were created. Bother me. He breathed the word and all the stars were born. He assigned the sea its boundaries and locked the oceans in vast reservoirs. Let the whole world fear the Lord and let everyone stand in awe of him. Now that word awe, In Hebrew, it means this. You're going on a journey. You notice something. You stop. And you stay. That's what the word means in original Hebrew. Do you remember Moses, when he was called by God? He was walking in the desert. He saw a bush. It was burning and not consumed. And he turned and he stopped. And go read Exodus. It says, when God saw that he turned, he spoke to him. God was waiting for him to turn. He was waiting for him to be filled with awe and stop. And then he spoke to him. And so that's what creation should do, according to David. When we look at what God has done, when we look at what he's made, that he's breathed it, it should make us go, wow. So even on this trip, we were camping at the foot of some mountains, the Swartberg Mountains. It was incredible. Every morning waking up to these mountains that are indescribable. They're way beyond my comprehension. And then we wanted to go up the Swartberg Pass, but it was closed because of rain. We heard about the Meyringspoort Pass. So we went through this pass. I had never been there before. It is ridiculous. I wanted to show you photos, but it would do it such an injustice that it's not worth it. We were driving, and I mean, it's a pass, so it's like swerving around. I'm pretty sure I almost caused a couple of accidents. Because as we're driving, I'm like, whoa, look at that! Look at that! Look at that! And then you stop halfway, and there's a waterfall. You park, there's parking spaces, and you walk up this little road, and there's a, I think it's close to a 100-meter waterfall, just cascading down into this beautiful pool. You can jump in there. It's incredible. Like, all the way around, I just went like, wow. And then we kept on driving. We weren't sure where the road was going. There was a little place called Klaastroom. We stopped there. There was a little farm stall, butt stall. We found something that led me to some more awe and wonder. Some cook sisters. It was the zenith of our journey. These cook sisters were, no, I'm joking. They were really amazing. But I wasn't praising God for the, actually, maybe I was. The cook sisters were amazing. The point is, when you're in nature, when you're in creation, it leads you to a response. And that first evening, we actually had like a, it was one of those trips where when we were driving to Oudtshoorn, something, our trailer broke, then I had to stop in Knysna, find someone who can fix it. Then the traffic was bad, then the fuel was expensive, and we got there and we were a little bit edgy. And the swimming pool wasn't working, and it was like 35 degrees Celsius in Oudtshoorn. But eventually, after having supper, and the sun started setting in these mountains. If you've ever been in a sunset and when you're in the midst of mountains, it's incredible. Because the sun sort of finds its way through different parts and lights different things. And every 5 minutes, the shades, they change. And they're different types of colors. And then the sun set in the west. And suddenly in the east, over one of the mountains, it was just like really, really bright. And a full moon rose over the mountains. Okay, I've got a picture of this. Again, it's not going to do it justice. That's the moon, guys. That's the moon. It was so bright because the sun had just set. And we couldn't but stop. And then it should lead us to awe and wonder. What it did for me is, okay, let me wrap my mind around this. Okay, this, I can't see the sun anymore. But right now, because of the angles, that sun is shining perfectly on the moon. And the light from the sun is reflecting on the moon to me. And all of this is happening whilst the earth is going around the sun at many tens of thousands of kilometers per hour, whilst the moon is going around the earth at many tens of thousands of kilometers. All of this is happening at the same time, and I'm watching this. I mean, the moon has been in the news lately. Yes. Artemis 2. Four puny human beings climbed into a spaceship and went around the moon and came back, and they landed yesterday in the ocean. Hey, we've got a pic of that. This is one of the pics. So that's the curve of the moon. When they were in the far side of the moon, they took a picture of the Earth rise. Not the sunrise, the Earth rise. This is one of the most incredible pics. One of the guys that went is a Christian. I mean, Tostar was saying this morning, since he's just been going, and even beforehand, he was just going like, God, it's amazing. Like, think about it. Like, four puny human beings climbed on a ship. The moon is about 400,000 kilometers away. 400,000 kilometers away. And they got there. And that's the closest, like, thing to our planet. It's, I mean, it is such a, 400,000. It's so staggering. How do you compute 400,000? But, I mean, Psalm 33 doesn't even mention the moon. It mentions that he breathed the word and all the stars were born. Our closest star is the sun. But the closest star after that is, okay, I had to do some research here, so bear with me. Proxima Centauri, the closest next star. You can put that pick up. It's a big red thing. I don't know if you guys can see at the back, but just a little bit of it gives you the relative sizes. The size of the, and this is, I think, 2 or 3 times bigger than our sun. This, Proxima Centauri, is 4.25 light years away. That is 40 trillion kilometers. 40 trillion. So it means when astronomers look, because it's light traveling through space, when they see Proxima Centauri, what they see is almost 4.5 years old. Because it takes that light 4.5 years to reach our eyes. That's not happening right now. It's 4.25 years it took for that light to arrive to hit their eyeballs. If someone were to travel to Proxima Centauri, in one of our spaceships, like the Voyager 1, travels at 60,000 kilometers an hour. So if you jump on that and say, I've got unlimited fuel, I'm going to get to Proxima Centauri, guess how long it would take you? 70,000 years. That's the closest one. So when David's saying, and David didn't even know these things, what this should do to us is go, wow, what? And God says he breathed it. He breathed it. It also says, Psalm 33 says, he gave the sea its boundaries. So you might be sitting here going like, okay, this is a bit too much for me. When you talk about those numbers, I'm thinking about maths and geography at school. It's just too much for me. And it, I mean, those are like spellbinding numbers. But the sea, the ocean, that's a bit more tangible, hey? Like, and going to the beach is a practice in awe and wonder if your eyes are open. So it's about 2 months ago. Maybe you can put that pick up. It's a famous old Scoonies. It's not my pick. But it was about 2 months ago. It was one of those ridiculously hot days. It was over 30 degrees Celsius. Got to the afternoon. It was just getting hotter and hotter. Jess and I said, let's just take our kids. Let's go swim. And Scoonies is the closest beach to us. So we got in our car. And as we're driving that old Sardinia Bay road that's like bumpy and you get over the hill, this mist bank started rolling in. And as I saw it, I was like, oh no, I can see where this movie's going. It's been boiling. And we're going to get there and there's going to be no sun. Lo and behold, we stopped in that car park. There was no sun. And suddenly it was just like a little bit cooler. I was like, we've come here to cool down and not by mist. We've come here to be cool. We got there and the tide was a bit high that day. So it meant when we went out in the rocks, there were little spots where you can jump off where if it's low tide, you can't jump because you'll break your back. But because it was high tide, we could jump off. And it was so fun. And we didn't care about the mist bank. It was incredible. We got there and we just had so much fun. When you get to the beach, it's always like a little bit different. It's never the same. We've gone there before. And because of the tide being a bit more almost like aggressive, it actually pulls you in, which is like a little bit scary, but it's so fun. And the tide pulls you in. And all of a sudden, it pushes you out again. And it's actually a bit of an analogy here because we can, I've grown up in PE. I've been here for 37 years. And the beach just becomes normal. It's just like, oh, let's go down to the beach. We jump in, we go back. And you forget how ridiculously good it is. That you get there and you cool down. That even those waves have to do with that moon that's like 40,000 kilometers away or however many. Like if that moon is in the right place, the tide is in the right place, the wind's blowing the right way, they're waves. And you can catch a wave. It's a bit like this morning. How good was it having Robin on violin this morning? It's beautiful, hey? And Rob's is a brilliant violin player. It's probably my favorite instrument, the violin. If it's played well, if it's played poorly, it's one of the worst instruments. But if it's played well like Robin does, it's beautiful. And because it's such a beautiful, like when I hear the violin, I just want to cry. It's just so beautiful. But even during worship this morning, I'm enjoying God, but I'm enjoying the violin. But I'm listening for it. There's a guitar and a piano and a bass and voices. But I'm listening for the violin. The greatness of God is a little bit like that. It can just be, some of you wouldn't, I said like, how beautiful was Robin on the violin? You weren't like, what? You didn't even hear the violin, maybe. If your ear isn't tuned to hear, and or your eyes aren't tuned to see God's greatness, we'll miss it. It'll just become common, like a little normal thing. I mean, if you get to the beach, if you want to be in awe and wonder, put your hand in the sand and pick it up. Look at the grains of sand. That sand was most likely, that one grain of sand was most likely a rock that traveled down a stream, got knocked about, became smaller and smaller, arrived at the ocean, and tides and waves just over years and years, back and forth, makes it smaller and smaller. That little grain of sand is a miracle. And God has designed it. Unless you're in Hawaii. So Hawaii has beautiful white beaches. Most of their sand is fish poop. Yeah. Can you put up that picture? This is so cool. I saw this a couple of years ago. That's a parrotfish. A parrotfish we do get, but this one is specifically in Hawaii. And they feed off coral. And so broken pieces of coral gets into their intestines and they poop out sand. So if you're lying on a beach in Hawaii going like, this is amazing, you're lying on fish poop. How beautifully creative. I know I'm just like, maybe I'm like, oh, I don't know about this. But there's these miracles. They're just everywhere. But it can become common. And one of the biggest thieves of awe and wonder is familiarity. When you just become used to it. When I was much younger, one day I was staying on a farm and we needed to cut down some old trees. So there was this old steel chainsaw. And I'd been waiting my turn to use this. Because it was just so cool, man. Like you run, and there's power and you can cut right through a hard piece of wood. And it was just so fun. So, and this one day they said, okay, Eugene, you can use a chainsaw. And for a young 19-year-old guy, this is like the ultimate. I'm going to prove myself. The girl's going to be super impressed. And so I was, the whole day, for 8 hours, I was using the chainsaw, like cutting through it. And you get to a point where you forget what you're holding. At one stage, I was cutting, and I let go of the throttle. But when you let go, the chainsaw goes for a couple of seconds. And I just dropped the chainsaw next to me, and it nicked my shorts and cut this hole in my shorts. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, well, shorts, whatever. And then I stopped. I was like, wait a minute. That thing was 1 millimeter away from my leg. Something that cuts through wood like margarine would look at my soft flesh and rip it apart. And there's the closest hospital is 1.5 hours away. And there's some big arteries in your leg. I was almost dead. Why? I became familiar. I'd forgotten the raw power that I was holding in my hands. And we can become the same with God. There's this incredible God who breathes galaxies into being. I just go like, okay. I was wondering, who in the Bible maybe just became too familiar with God? When you stop and think about it, there's actually probably a lot. But I was thinking about Judas. Judas who betrayed Jesus. I was wondering, at what point did God just become too familiar? He spent 3 years with Jesus. Maybe the first time Jesus heals a leper, like suddenly all these leprous spots are gone. It's the first time Judas sees it. He goes like, that's amazing. He must be the Son of God. Like, this is amazing. And then 2 years later, Jesus heals a paralyzed man. Man who could never walk, and he's walking. I don't know. Judas was like, okay. Okay. If we lose our wonder, if we lose our wonder, friends, get into God's creation. Like, honestly, we saved 3 years to do this and to get out there. And it's a privilege. The fact that we could save money and be there, and I know it's incredibly difficult economic times. It's worth it. Take your children out there. Get them away from the Xbox and the PS4. What's PS is out now? PS5? 6? 5? I don't even know. Praise God, I don't know. When they're controlling little Ronaldo and he scores a goal, it's not going to lead to any awe and wonder, I promise you. It's going to distract them. PS5 is fine. If you own a PS5, be blessed. I mean that seriously. I'm not saying PS5 is evil. I'm saying get yourself and your children into nature. I know your teenagers complain. I know. I've got 3 of them. Why are we camping? Why are we setting up tents? Not Samuel, you know, you would never complain. No, Jack. He actually, Samuel loves the outdoors, so he loves the outdoors. But okay, you can't get away. Sardinia Bay is just down the road. If you say sunset at Sardinia Bay, Jason Cramer is like, what, where, when, how, where? Okay, so if you need a path, if you need a lift, if you don't have a car, you just text message Jason. Hey, Jason, Sardinia Bay sunset. You don't even have to, that's all you have to say. It's like, I'll be there in 5 minutes. Go, do it. Van Staden's Flower Reserve, like the Woodridge Turnoff, it's right there. Go walk amongst the fynbos there. It's incredible. Barkens Valley. I know some parts of Barkens Valley, you might need like a specialized Leatherman to protect yourself. But if you go down William Moffat, beautiful. Honestly, just your own backyard. If you sit and look at the grass, I've done this, I love this. You sit and you think grass is just still. When you stop and just focus on one piece of grass, it's moving. There's little bugs. It's growing. It's changing. And when you do that, you go, wow. Psalm 8. David, I mean, he's just saying the same thing he said in Psalm 33. Is that the first one? Oh, I didn't give you verse 3. Can you find verse 3 first? Sorry, man. It's my mistake. I just want to start verse 3. Doesn't make sense. Get out, man. Don't get stuck in your home. I read a scientific study. Getting out just into your backyard decreases your chances of depression. You don't even have to go like to a ridiculous place. You can sit in your backyard and look at the stars and the moon. Okay. I'm going to just read verse 3 so long. David says, "When I look at the night sky and see the work of your fingers." Oh my goodness. "The moon and the stars you set in place, what are mere mortals that you should think about them? Human beings that you should care for them." And then verse 5, "Yet you made them only a little lower than God and crowned them with glory and honor." Do you see the trajectory David goes on? It's kind of like when you see the magnitude of God, his majesty, when you're filled with awe and wonder and you see how big and great he is, you then think about yourself and go, "Oh, I'm really small." And actually, you need to think about yourself and what God has done. I'm sorry to run out of time a bit, but I didn't like biology. I dropped it in grade 9. Okay. But I'm going to throw a couple of facts your way about your body. So there's this book, I think my wife gave it to me a while ago, by actually a travel writer, On the Body. This dude's an atheist. He doesn't believe in God. It's one of my favorite books. He looks at different parts of the body. He just goes into the detail. He's also a layman, but he's consulted all these scientists and done his own research. And then one of my favorite moments in the book, and it happens regularly, because he goes into what the brain is like and the lungs and how incredible it is. And he's lost for words. And he says, "Why evolution chose to do it like this, we don't know." It's one of my favorite moments because he can see there's an intelligent designer behind this. And so he has to personify evolution. Evolution, by definition, is a chance process. It just happens randomly. You are here, according to evolution, just by chance. That grain of sand, which is a piece of rock, it kept on going, or accidentally was pooped out by a parrotfish. But then he gets to some of these things in the body, and he goes, why did evolution decide? And we know the answer. Friends, evolution, the theory that it was chance that led to this is foolishness. All of creation cries out for intelligent designer. My wife studied a BSc. Some of it was zoology, which is looking macro, big. And then she also did microbiology. What did you? Biochemistry, sorry. That's how little I know. Not microbiology, biochemistry. Okay. And she said, almost without fail, the zoology lecturers were all atheists. They couldn't see. But the biochemistry, when they look down at the microscopic and how it all works together, they can't not believe. You look at your body as a miracle. I was tempted to ask Jen to come and tell us what Jen's a doctor, so she works with the human body. But let me give you some things. Just two things that are, for me, is staggering. Your heart is ridiculous. Your heart, so it pumps blood through your body every day. It beats 100,000 times per day. That is, how long you live is a bit more relative. But a normal lifespan, it means 3.5 billion times your heart beats. How often have you decided to make your heart beat? How often are you able to stop your heart by yourself? It just goes. I know that we learn about that in biology like in grade 5 maybe. It's autonomic, hey? Okay, thank you. Our breathing, our heartbeat, our eyes, like closing our eyes, like it just happens. You never think about it. It's not too simplistic to go, oh my goodness. Someone is in charge here. Your heart pumps 260 liters of blood per hour. That's 62,240 liters per day. Now, at our home, we've got a little water pump that filters water. That thing needs to be serviced twice a year. That means every 6 months, someone comes in, he opens it up, he takes out the filter. We all revolted or reviled by how ugly, it's like black gunk in that filter, and he puts a new filter in. Make sure all the parts are working. Your heart doesn't need that. No one opens it up, replaces the filters, the valves. It just keeps going and going and going. But probably one of my favorite little things from this book I read, it's a topic on the brain, or the chapters on the brain. Do you know that you are right now living in a version of reality, not reality? I'm not talking about Matrix kind of stuff, okay? Not that far away. So this is how, and I read one or two different sources. I might have some things wrong, and then the clever people can correct me. But light travels at speed. So light hits your eye. It's got receptors. And that message then gets communicated to your brain, where it gets processed and interpreted. That process, from your eye to your brain and processing, takes 1/5 of a second. So that's super quick. But it's not all that slow either. Because if you're sitting at St. George's Park watching a T20 game, and someone hits a 6 and that ball is on its way to you, 1/5 of a second is a lot. You want to get out of the way of that ball very quickly. And actually in Cape Town this year, a lady was hit and she ended up in hospital. So 1/5 of a second is a lot. What your brain does is it predicts what's going to happen in 1/5 of a second of a time, the whole time, without you thinking about it. You're living in a version of reality. That's how incredible your brain. Even the fact that sound and light travel at different speeds means your brain has to sort that out. Have you ever watched a movie where the dialogue's like half a second behind? It's the worst thing in the world. You're like restarting that thing over and over. That's what it should be like for us, but your brain is consistently. Isn't that incredible? Doesn't that speak of a maker who is so concerned about us? I mean, listen to this. This was a professor at the University of Durham. How do you pronounce it, Gabs? Durham, okay, in England. He tried to calculate how much data our brain can store. And it's astronomical. So if your brain was an external hard drive, how much data can it store? A piece of your brain that's the size of one grain of sand. Not a pooped out version, maybe like a nicer version. One grain of sand of your brain can hold 2,000 terabytes of information. Your whole brain, it starts going in the realm of exabytes. It is incredible. Psalm 139. I mean, David, who wrote Psalm 8, who wrote Psalm 33, wrote this. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me to... That's such an intimate word. It's like God is, like in your mother's womb, he's knitting. My girls are learning some sewing. And I see them, like, sorry, I'm in areas I shouldn't be in now. But I see them painstakingly taking a needle with the thread in it. And there's like a little pattern on this piece of fabric. And they go over the pattern and have to get the little like knot it makes perfectly right. Like it's all that, I mean, Jalen is 9 years old. All the attention is just focused on this piece of fabric, that little needle and the thread going in and out and in and out according to the pattern. That's what God has done with you and me. You're not a mistake. I don't care how you were conceived, what happened with your parents. God knew about you. He formed you. He knitted you together. The next verse. I praise you. This is what it happens when you think about that. I praise you, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. Awe and wonder. But in Psalm 8, can you put that Psalm 8 up again? David's actually not talking about our body. That's not really what's getting him. He says this in Psalm 8, verse 4. What are mere mortals that you should think about them? That you should care for them? That's actually what gets David to be like amazed at what God does. Friends, the person sitting next to you is a miracle on so many levels. So last week, it was Jaden's baptism. Where's Jaden? Oh, there he is in the back. So I couldn't be there. But I got the photo. And unfortunately, I projected so you can't see. Like it was one of the best baptism pics ever. Because normally a baptism pic is quite like an ugly thing because you're going down, you've got water coming up your nose. When you come up, normally when the photographer takes a picture, you're like this, and you're frozen like that. I don't know if Jaden planned this. He's got this massive smile on his face. It's a really cool pic. When I saw that pic, I was like Moses. I was doing things, I stopped. Because there next to him is Simpiwe. I feel like I've often used Simpiwe as an example. But Simpiwe's life leads me to awe and wonder. When I was looking at that pic, I was like, I know Simpiwe's past. I know he grew up in abject poverty in Noupoort, walking barefoot to school, came to PE, difficult family circumstances in Noupoort, family rejected him, comes to PE, finds Jesus. His only family here kicks him out of the house. Studies, works, His brother spent time in prison. So Pee-wee's life is a miracle. And he's giving Jaden and Myra something that he'd never received. If that doesn't bring me to awe and wonder, then I've become numb and broken. There are miracles, there are opportunities. That violin is playing in the background over and over and over. On Wednesday night, Hannah, who's unfortunately not here, was baptized as well. Now, I don't know. I've never actually spoken to Hannah, but Jess has spoken to her. Some of you have. And then Thursday morning, Brent's like, yeah, Hannah got baptized. And then I didn't know much of the story. And then I'm looking at WhatsApp statuses, and Kirst has the baptism there, and she's got like a little write-up of the miracle. Now, listen, at that moment, I'm looking at WhatsApp statuses. How long is it? Like, you've got like 4 seconds, eh, or something like that. And that thing goes into oblivion. When I saw that pic, I had to put my finger on it so it stops. Click on more and read the whole thing and go, oh my goodness. God, what have you done? You found this girl, you found this young lady in a desperate situation. You've brought her to you. Some of you, I mean, Kirst has walked a journey with, Kirst knew her from, I think, cycling days, and Bridget knows her from, I think, knows her parents. And like, she's come to know Jesus. She's changed forever. Like, that should make me go, Jesus, whoa. Awe and wonder. But the second thing, I said familiarity can numb us, but the other thing that can get us is distraction. And I mean, give me your phone, Dan. This thing is training us how to be distracted. It's training us how to flick through miracles. Okay, someone got baptized. Amazing. Whoa! The cricket score is. Oh, yeah, Jaden is baptized. Okay. Wow, the storm has won. It's preventing us from stopping. Okay. And again, this is a great thing. You can't go and throw your phone away. You need it to survive in our world. But put it under your control. Don't let it train you. Train it. Because we're learning through TikTok and Twitter and every, like, just to scroll. And we're scrolling past miracles. And we're losing our awe and wonder. Maybe, Chris, can you guys come up so long? We're just going to go back into worship. And I'm hoping, what I'm hoping this has done is just helped us all to stop and consider. And when we say consider, it's not consider as in like, I'm considering whether I should have a burger for lunch or pizza for lunch. Consider means to stop, think, turn aside, and stay. This morning I was just stopping. I stopped. I just thought about Jesus. Last week, JC preached on the resurrection. Thank God we can look at the cross over and over and find new things to fill us with awe and wonder. And last week, as JC was preaching, it was about the fact that Jesus hung on the cross and he died. And he really emphasized it. He's like, he died. His head would have like fallen forward. Like his lifeless body was there. For 3 days, he was dead. No life. Dead. I was sitting here and going, oh, Jesus. This morning, I was thinking about that again. And I was thinking about this passage, this verse in 2 Corinthians. Did I send that one to you, Ez? Ez is also an awe and wonder. Thanks, Ez. I'm glad. And Paul he's talking to this church and trying to encourage him to give to another church. And listen to his argument. It's just, he says, you know the generous grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. Though he was rich, yet for our sakes he became poor. So that by his poverty, he could make you rich. He's not manipulating them. He's not trying to make them feel guilty so they give money to another church. He's going like, just stop. If you're thinking about whether you should give to this church, just stop quickly. What did Jesus do? The Son of God, through whom all things came into being, and through whom all things are held in place right now, became a lowly man. He wasn't handsome. He said he wasn't something to look at. He came from a place that no one regarded. He was a refugee in Egypt. He became poor. He lived with a physically, literally with a poor family. And then at the crucifixion, he had the clothes ripped from his body, a crown of thorns dug into his head, blood poured. He became poorer and poorer and poorer and poorer in every sense of the word. Why? So that you and I can be rich. Right now, as you're sitting here, if you're a follower of Christ, you are the wealthiest man, the wealthiest woman in all of creation. Because the Son of God has saved you, has chosen you, has made you his son. The Father has said that the same inheritance Jesus gets is what you will get. You are infinitely wealthy. And that should bring you to a place of going, whoa.